Thank you. Good evening, everybody. How you all doing? How about this weather? It's pretty neat, huh? Yeah, it's a good deal. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a pleasure to be here. It's a real privilege to be able to ask to do something like this. It's been, this is a favorite group of mine. I get to do this once a year. And I haven't found necessary to take a drink, nor have I had a drink, since January 25th, 1981, and by God's grace. And God's grace has helped me in a few other areas, too. It's helped me with the drinking problem. It's helped me with a few other things. Has anybody, y'all look physically sober to me. Most of you guys sober? Physically. I'm not talking about the emotional, spiritual part. You know, Bill Wilson says, and what I really like to talk about, as you probably realize, I've mentioned this before, is I like to talk about the next frontier. Emotional, so they call it emotional. Bill Wilson called it emotional sobriety. He said our real addiction, our real problem is unhealthy dependencies. But in any event, y'all look physically sober. And I don't find too many people in AA suffering from drinking problems. You guys go to a lot of AA meetings, right? Don't you? Is it true most people in AA are physically sober? You find that? I think it really helps to work the program to stay sober. Very hard to work this program if you're drinking. Have you found after you got sober, has anybody found that after you got sober there's like other issues? Am I the only guy? Just me, you know. Some other stuff going on. It's like I said last week, one of the best ways to find out why you drank is to stay sober. Somewhere around 3 o'clock in the morning it's going to dawn upon you that a drink or a bullet in the head would be real good, you know? Really solve the problem. The United Negro College Fund, this is way before most of y'all's time, used to have this great commercial. And the tagline of the commercial was, "A mind, what a terrible thing to waste." And I used to watch that commercial, and this is what I used to think. Every time they would say that, "A mind, what a terrible thing to waste," I'd immediately say, "That's because they don't have my mind." If they had my mind, it'd be a whole different deal. So I came to Alcoholics and I'm 64. I'll be 64 March 16th this month. So I came in when I was 31 years old. And I came in because I thought I had a drinking problem. Which, A, is a good place to go if you think you have a drinking problem. You know, the name, Alcoholics Anonymous. You figure that's what it must be. But I didn't come in here for any other reason. I wasn't here. I wasn't looking for God. I was looking for a blonde or something. I don't know what I was looking for. I knew a blonde would solve my problem. A blonde has never solved my blonde problem. A woman has never, ever. Women like actually magnify my problem. I didn't know that. You know, you don't realize that as an alcoholic. I was a pretty bright guy. You know, you don't realize that. Women, and it's not, women, listen, I love women. I love women in AA. It's not your fault. You're not to blame. You didn't do anything wrong, you know? You know, but it's you know, for guys like me, women actually magnify the problem. They don't make it better, they make it worse. You know, unless you get into some sort of right frame of mind. And there's a lot of things that magnify, you know, money sort of magnifies the problem. You know, there's a lot of things that I thought, you know, I thought alcohol solved the problem, and it didn't. I thought money solved the problem. I thought jobs solved the problem. I thought women solved the problem. I had a lot of old ideas. You know, most of those old ideas are hard to get rid of. So in any event, you know, around the ninth step, that's the step, it's right after that, where they come up with this thing called the promises. But I want to read these things, you know, and then I'm going to read a story that I read all the time, and I'm going to talk a little bit about these promises. It says, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, and I think this comes around, yeah, they said, this is when they say we're like a tornado roaring through people's lives. Tornado. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. A new freedom and a new happiness. That's what it says. We're going to have a... You know what it says? Even before that, when we first read this thing, you know, and I'm just going by the big book here. You know, I'm going to give my opinions based upon my experience. But the big book says we're going to know much... He says, we have found much of heaven and we have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. Anybody, am I the only one who has this book? Anybody have seen this book? This is the basic text of AA. This is the you know what they say in this book? In the form they say, this is the thing we can agree on. Okay? How many people here have stopped drinking? You know, how many, it says, three? We got 200 people? Okay. People. Listen, it says, here's what it says. We are over 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. You know, how many know what that hopeless state of mind and body? How many, am I the only guy in here? You ever have a situation where you say to yourself, you wake up in the morning, you say something like this, I'm not going to have a drink today? Anybody ever say that? I'm not going to drink today? And then you wind up drunk? I'm not the only guy, right? It's like, how many people have ever said to themselves, I'm not going to drink today, and like meant it, and then you wind up drunk later on that day? Has that ever happened? Wow. Wow. My brothers and sisters, you know what I mean? You know, you don't realize that there are, you want to know something? This is going to scary thing. There are people in this world that if I said that to them, they wouldn't know what I was talking about. As a matter of fact, most people in this world, most by far, if I said, I tell myself I'm not going to have a drink today and I ended up drunk, they would look at me like I was strange. Only you guys know exactly what I'm talking about, and you don't even think I'm strange. Well, you probably think I'm strange, but you think I'm strange like you. You know what I mean? Isn't this great? You know what I mean? And you used to, how many ever thought things like, they'll never understand. Nobody could possibly understand me, you know? You ever think that? And you know, you come in here and like everybody knows you, you know what I mean? Everybody knows what's going on with you. So everybody here apparently has, so when you have a situation where you wake up and you say, I'm not going to drink today, or I'm not going to go to the bar today, you know, I'm not going to buy liquor today. And you end up doing it anyway. You know, you understand what I'm saying? You end up drinking against your will. Okay? That's a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Can we agree on that? Well, first of all, you guys, I'm looking at you guys don't suffer from that thing right now. I know you have girlfriend, boyfriend problems, sex problems, you know, money problems, you know, you can't believe what they're doing to you, life's unfair, and all that sort of stuff, but you don't have that waking up in the morning, I'm not going to drink. You don't have that, I'm not going to drink today, and you end up drunk anyway problem, right? Okay, that's the seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. How many people have recovered from that? Man, so you're, you don't even want your money back. You're like a satisfied customer, okay? So nobody here really has a drinking problem. Well, I pretty much think we can all go home now. That pretty much solves the deal, right? But yet you guys are going to meetings, right? You want more. You think there's something more out there, right? That's because, like this guy in the big book, Bill Dotson, it's kind of neat to know that there were people 60, 70 years ago, thousands of years ago, who were exactly like us. If you put them in a room, they'd know exactly what we were talking about. This thing's been going on for a long time. So in Alcoholics Anonymous 3, Bill Dodson, while sitting in his kitchen with his wife Henrietta, this is on page 191 of the Big Book, says the following. It would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed, this is what he noticed. He says, I noticed that the others, whoever the others are, you know who the others were? They were his we. You know, he says, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. If you want what we have. For Bill Dodson, the others, the people he's talking about that he was looking at was his we. Bill Wilson was part of his we. Dr. Bob was part of his we. Bill Dodson is the guy who was the man on the bed. Where's the man on the bed? There he is. You see that picture over there? You see to my left, your right. See that guy on the bed? The guy that looks kind of skinny and slinky. He's the guy who popped the nurse in the mouth. He was a lawyer. He hit the nurse in the mouth. They said, we got a real corker here. You know what I mean? And see those two guys sitting there? One of them has the Bible in his hands. That's what it was. It's 1935, 36. They didn't have a Big Book. They had the Bible. One of them has the Bible. That's Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob. That's a rendition of them 12-stepping or 12-stomping, whichever way you want to talk about. The guy in the bed. Bill Dodson. So this is Bill Dodson's story. The guy that he even talks about what happened when they 12-stepped and how they 12-stepped him. And this is what he says. He says, it would be hard. Now it's about 2 or 3 weeks out of the hospital. He's sitting in his kitchen. His wife's name is Henrietta, not to be confused with Henrietta Siverling, different person. And Bill Wilson is there. They're eating. He's eating like a tuna fish sandwich. They're feeding him lunch. And he's telling his story right here. It says, it would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program, and I wanted to go along with it. Now listen to me. He had what you guys had. He had recovered. He's one of the 100 men and women who had recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. He wasn't drinking anymore. He wasn't going to detox anymore. He was free of the booze. He didn't have a desire to drink. He says, I really wanted the program and I wanted others to go along with it. He noticed that the others, Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob, seemed to have such a release, a happiness, a something I thought a person ought to have. In other words, even though he wasn't drinking, he was still crazy. I sponsored a guy once. I still sponsor him. He's got like 30 years now. And he got sober and couldn't stop drinking, couldn't stop drugging, and he got sober. And a month after he got sober, 3 or 4 weeks after he got sober, he loved AA. He loved it. He loved it. He was like, it's like saved his life. He loved it. But he was like distressed. He called me up one day after 3 or 4 weeks, you know, like this guy, distressed because he was driving his cars or something, and he realized something. He realized that he was crazy. Anybody here ever think crazy thoughts? Like bad thoughts about yourself and other people over and over again? And they make you real like uncomfortable and stuff, and you can't stop it? And it kind of screws up your brain, and you can't talk to somebody about it because they're so flipping crazy and they won't go away. And by the way, that's alcoholism. Don't worry about it. You're in the right place. So he called me up and he said, Russell, he says, I got a problem. He says, I'm really concerned. He was really concerned. He said, I don't think I'm an alcoholic. I said, really, Tommy? He says, no, I don't think I'm an alcoholic. He says, I think I may just be crazy. And I said, Tommy, don't worry. You can be both. See, he thought he had to leave the rooms. He thought Alcoholics Anonymous was people who had a drinking problem. And he didn't have a drinking problem anymore. He was just crazy. So he thought he might have to leave. So as his sponsor, he was like confiding with me. He wanted to know whether he could stay. So I explained to him that you could actually, did you know that? You can be, have a drinking, you can be both. So if you're crazy, like he was crazy, like I'm crazy, you're in the right place. So he says, Bill Dodson says, I noticed that others seem to have such a release, a happiness, a something I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I haven't got. So, you know, after a while, after you've been here and you stop drinking, some of us, like I did, I don't think you've got to be too bright to do it, you realize, you watch people, you see what's going on, you sort of watch yourself, you live with yourself for a while, sober. Oh, that's a kick, you know? Live with yourself at 3 o'clock in the morning, sober, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, so you're like constantly with yourself. I mean, you're like with yourself all the time. I mean, when you at least drink on a drug, you could like get rid of that guy, you know what I mean? But now you're like hanging out with him all the time. And what happens is, you know, you realize that there's something more. There's something more out there. So you go to these meetings and you listen to these people, like I listen to these people, that seem to have something more, something you haven't got. He says, I knew there was something more. And I was trying to find the answer, trying to find the answer. And he says, I knew there was something more, something I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of the hospital, Bill was at my house. Now listen to me. This is what I'm going to do for you guys tonight. I'm going to give you guys the answer. I'm going to give you guys the answer to all your problems. You'll never have to go anywhere else after tonight to figure out what the answer is, because I'm going to hand it to you on a silver platter. I'm going to hand you the answer. Now, some of you are going to shit on the answer. Some of you aren't even going to hear the answer. Some of you aren't going to like the answer. Some of you will say, I knew that was the answer. I have no control over how you accept or reject the answer. But I'm going to give you the answer. This isn't even my answer. Well, it's my answer today. Because after many years of living this life and getting what they've talked about you can get in this book, this is now my answer. But I didn't invent this answer. You know, this is an answer. This is the answer of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, you may think the answer is don't drink and go to meetings. That's not the answer. You may think the answer is doing the steps. That is not the answer. You may think the answer is getting a sponsor. That is not the answer. There are gazillions of people that have sponsors that drink. There are gazillions of people that go to meetings that end up drinking. There are people that do the steps all the time that end up drinking. There are people that are doing that what I'm doing right now, end up drinking. There are people that are doing all that stuff and they're miserable. And they got 20 years. And they're feeling sorry for themselves. And they feel crappy about themselves and other people. And if you actually hang around them, all they want to do is criticize other people behind their back and say bad stuff about other people. They put down religion, they put down God, they put down everything. They're negative, and they live lives of quiet desperation, and they're picking up 20-year medallions. And 5-year medallions. And if that's the sobriety you want, let me tell you something. It's available for you in Alcoholics Anonymous. As I've learned a long time ago, this is in Well People's Anonymous. This is a program if you want what we have. But then there's another type of sobriety. There's a different type of sobriety in here. You know, there's the sobriety, there's the not drinking door, where you don't drink, and they clap for you, you know, every year. And then there's the experience much of heaven, being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence door. And let me tell you something about your life. I'm going to suggest to you that this is not a dress rehearsal. This is not one of these deals you get to 80 and 90 or whatever it is, and then you say, you know, this really hasn't worked out so good. I think I'll try it the AA way. I'm going to do this thing now. I'm not going to worry about what they think about me in AA or what my mother or father thinks about me. I'm going to try it the different way. You know, you got one shot at this deal, as far as I know. I don't know if anybody says you got 3 or 4 shots. You know, maybe you do come back again or something like that, but I don't know. Seems to me that there's a possibility this could be it for you. This day will never come again. You may not be around. Nobody can guarantee you're going to be around 5 minutes from now. I can't guarantee I'm even going to make it home tonight. So you may want to try this. You may not want to try this deal out. The rocket in the fourth dimension thing. You know, the thing that he was talking about. I knew there was something more. So he's watching Bill Wilson. Because I'm going to give you the answer. And it's not only my answer. It's the big book's answer. You know, I don't know what fellowship you're in. Just because you're a pig. Just because you're standing in the garage doesn't mean you're a Chevy. Just because you're in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting doesn't mean you're in Alcoholics Anonymous or you're doing Alcoholics Anonymous. Just because you're picking up the chips and doing all the cute things we do in here. You're doing this deal. You're doing the deal the way they did it in the good old days. So let me read this thing. So what we're going to do here is I'm going to read a few excerpts from the big book, a little review section. And you know, and I think you guys are bright enough, and since you're physically sober, you might have a shot of getting this. Unless you're in denial. Or unless, you know, we do have a chief characteristic. It's called defiance. Unless you want to be defiant. I don't like the way that guy's talking to me. Well, hey, listen, forget about me. Forget about principles over personalities. Now forget about me. I don't like the way he's talking to me. He sounds like he's talking down to me, like he's preaching to me or anything, whatever the heck it is. Well, you know, the spiritual axiom, the spiritual axiom, whenever I'm disturbed, no matter what the cause is, something wrong with me. So if I bother you, you need to find out what that problem is you got. You know, I've hit upon something. There's something about me that bothers you. You better check that out, because if it's something about me that bothers you, you know what? Then whatever it is in me that's bothering you is killing you outside, because I'm all over the world. In different people and different things. Don't think I'm the only one. Whatever it is in me that's bothering you is also bothering you in traffic. It's bothering you at work. It's bothering you at home. It's the same thing that's bothering you. If you don't get rid of that thing that's bothering you, you will never experience much of heaven. You will never have that new freedom and new happiness. So what you need to do is say, you know, he bothers me. Why does he bother me? Maybe you'll need to do that list, do those tools. Maybe you'll need to talk to this boss. Maybe you'll need to pray about it. Maybe one day you'll figure out why he bothers you. And then you'll figure out that I don't bother you at all. You're just botherable. And you'll decide, you'll pray to God. You'll say, God, please don't let me be botherable. And then you'll be like one of these people who say, you know, I used to hate you, but now I love you. Don't bother me anymore. As a matter of fact, I'm not bothered by much anymore, you know. And then maybe you'll have that new freedom and that new happiness. And some guy will say things to you like, I wish I could have what Joe has, you know? Doesn't seem bothered anymore by stuff. So listen, here we go. Let's launch into what's this all about, okay? Says, I really wanted the program and I wanted to go along with that. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, a something that I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. He's trying to find the answer. He's trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't gotten. I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of the hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch and I was listening, trying to find out why they had this release they seemed to have. Now remember, the big book says, why do they say men and women drink? They say men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. I don't know about you, I drank for the effect. You know what I mean? I drank to get on that rocket ship ride, to get on that place, that spot. You know what I mean? And it says we drink because men and women drink because they are restless, they are irritable, and they are discontented. And they're describing the way alcoholics are, you ready for this? Sober. You understand? There's not drinking, and then there's drinking. Not drinking, if you're an alcoholic, means you're restless, irritable, and discontented. Another way, a deeper way of saying it, is early on they say selfishness, self-centeredness, that is the root of our problem, driven by 100 forms of fear. 100 forms. That means if you figured out like 10 of them, you got 90 more to go. You know what I mean? And you may be working on two of them, and there's like, you know, 88 of them that you haven't even figured out yet. You know what I mean? That you're going to figure out as life goes by. You know, around 10 years sober, there's going to be three that popped up you don't even know about. You know, when you get to be around 60 and they tell you have cancer, there's going to be a few more that pop up that you don't even know about. As you go through life, you're going to keep on finding, you're going to say, I thought I had that fear licked, and now I'm worried about this cancer. I thought I had this fear licked, now I'm worried about this homeless thing. I thought I had this fear licked, and you're going to be dealing with that. You're going to be, in my 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-pity, we step on the toes of others, they retaliate, and alcohol is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though it usually doesn't think so. So it doesn't matter whether you agree with me or not. What do you know? You're an alcoholic, you usually don't think so. Your alcoholic life seems the only normal one. It seems normal to you to feel the way you do. You've never felt any way other than the way you feel. You've never thought of things any different the way you think of things. You're blaming people or blaming others or feeling like life is unfair, you know, or saying, I can't believe this is happening to me, or feeling sorry for yourself, or being filled with self-pity, or all the stuff that happens to you that makes you restless, irritable, discontented, seems absolutely normal to you. Somebody says to you, well, stop feeling that way. You say, what, are you crazy? How do you do that? You know, you don't even believe people that say that they don't feel that way. And if you see something like that, you look at them like in awe, you say, how does he do it? How do you do it? You know, people say to you things like, why don't you chair the meeting? You say, I'm not ready. You know, what you really mean is, I ain't never going to be ready because I'm scared. I'm worried I'll screw up. But you watch other people do the meetings, just like I'm doing the meeting now. You say, how does he do it? Just like I watch people do the meeting, say, how does he do it? You say, how does he do that? How does he get up there and just talk like extemporaneous? How does he do that? And then 10 years from now, you're doing it. And somebody asks you, how did you do it? And you say, I don't know. I used to be scared. Now I'm not scared. One small step for man, one, you know, giant step for mankind. People grow. People change. Stuff happens. It's like amazing. You know, if you can do this, you can do anything. If you can publicly speak and give your testimony and witness about what God's done in your life, you can do anything. Anywhere. With anybody. Without fear. That's a new freedom for us. That's a new happiness to be transparent and talk about yourself. To be you. Do you know how incredible it is to be? I'm saying to be you instead of what you think other people think you should be. You can't imagine. Listen, I am so good at being me, it's unbelievable. I never used to be me. I used to be whoever you wanted me to be, whoever I thought you wanted me to be, you know? If I was in a country western bar, I said, you know, I'm drinking beer. If I'm in Manhattan, I'm drinking a martini. You know, if I'm in Key West, I'm drinking margarita. If I'm in a pot party, I'm smoking pot. I'm doing whatever anybody else is doing to fit in. You know, I'm not being me. I don't even know how to be me. How am I going to know how to be me when I don't even know who me is? But you know how easy it is to be me instead of worrying about who I'm supposed to be or what I was or why I said that or why I did that? Especially when nobody's a better me than me. I'm the best me. Nobody can do me like me. I'm like a unique me, and I can do me better than anybody else in the world. And I can do me. You ready for this? I don't even need practice to do me. I don't need a script or anything like that. I just do me. You know? But most of us won't even do you because you're worried about if you do you, people won't like you. And that's another problem. Why are you worried so much about what people think about you? I know you don't give a crap what other people think about you, but I know. You don't give a crap. I don't give a crap what other people think about me. I didn't give a crap what other people thought about me. I used to tell them, I said, I don't give a crap what they think about me. And then, of course, I realized that people that say I don't give a crap what other people think about me, all they do is think about what other people think about me, because people that really don't give a crap what other people think about them don't say I don't give a crap what other people think about me. They say things like cast the salt or something. I don't know. They don't say that. And I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of the hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch, and I was listening, trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. You know, in the big book, I don't know if you realize this, and early on in the big book, it says, our stories disclose in a general way. It says, our stories. You know what it says our stories does? He says, the big book, it says, our stories disclose, A, that we're alcoholics and could not manage our own lives. How many people think that they can manage their lives? Well, of course, you know, you're saying that because you're not raising your hand. You all think you can manage your lives. Because as soon as I'm done with this talk, you're going to go out into the world and you're going to start trying to manage your life. And then you're going to run into it. You're going to run into, you know what you're going to run into? Life. It's not cooperating. You're going to run into other people. They're not cooperating. You're going to run into the world. They're not doing it your way. It's not happening. You're going to try to manage them, right? You know, you'll be a little nicer this time. You'll be like some, you'll play this game, you'll play that game. You'll yell at this one, you'll kick that one, you'll lie to that one. You'll do that sort of stuff and say, you know, you'll lose sleep, you won't be able to get sleep, you'll worry about him, you'll worry about her. You'll start manage your life, you'll screw it up like you've always screwed it up and feel crappy about yourself and other people. So that won't work out. It says you cannot manage your own life. No human power could have removed your alcoholism. I'm not going to be able to do it. Nobody else is going to be able to. No human power is going to be able to. You're going to be looking for, you're going to, girls, I know you're looking for the guy. Guys, I know you're looking for the gal. They're not going to help you. They're not going to do it. Because, you know, once you get them, you know what you're going to try to do? You're going to try to manage them. It's not going to work out. It hasn't ever before. It's not going to work out now. Then it says God couldn't would if he were sought. That's not me talking. That's what the big book says, right? And then you know what it says right after that? Being convinced of that. Being convinced. Unless you're convinced of that, you're not even, forget it. You're now at step three. Reading this stuff is important is because one of the things to do is in order to get rid of that new happiness is you're going to have to get rid of that guilt. I used to say to my sponsor, you know, that's the ninth step is all about, guilt. Personal relationships. I used to say to my sponsor, I feel guilty. He said, that's because you are guilty. Well, that's possible, you know. So it says this. Bill looked across at my wife and Bill was at my house talking to my wife. We were eating lunch and I was listening, trying to find out why they had this release that they seem to have. Well, first of all, you got to decide whether you want it. How many people would, you stopped drinking. We already stopped. How many people want to experience much of heaven and be rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence of which you would not even drink? How many people would like that drug? Man, if you don't want that drug, you're not even an alcoholic. I mean, I don't know what you are. You're not even a dope fiend, you know? I mean, I'll tell you, if somebody said to me, hey, try this stuff, you're going to experience much of heaven, be rocketing in the fourth dimension of existence of which you would not even dream, and say, hey, give me five of them, you know? I'm popping them right now, you know? Man, if you don't want that crap, you know, I don't even know what you're doing here. You're the wrong crowd. Okay, it says here, I was listening, trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. Bill, that's Bill Wilson, looked across at my wife and said to her, this is what Bill Wilson said, Henrietta, the Lord, with a capital L, who do you think he was talking about? Okay, you're not allowed to say the name. Okay, Henrietta, the Lord, they were reading the Bible then, so I think I know who he was talking about. The Lord has been so wonderful to me. He's talking about him like he's like a real thing. Like he's a real thing. He didn't say the group. He didn't say, you know, my sponsor. He didn't say the big book. Or he didn't say, he said the Lord. It's almost like he had a personal relationship with God. It's almost like he believed in God. It's almost like God was a person to him. It was a personal relationship. You know, it's almost like that, you know. The Lord, he was talking about God like it was an actual real being that he had a relationship with. The Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease. You know what? He was talking about the same thing you got, that alcoholism thing, that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people. That's what Bill Wilson said. That's what he said. That's how he felt. That's what Bill Dotson noticed. So Bill Dotson, noticing that, says, I think I have the answer. This is before the 12 steps were invented. Well, not before they were invented. The 12 steps have been around for thousands of years. Just because Bill Wilson codified them and put them in writing doesn't mean they weren't around when Jesus did Sermon on the Mount. Because in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, it says the first A meeting was Dr. Bob reading Sermon on the Mount. It says the books that they found essential, absolutely essential, was, okay, 1 Corinthians 13, the book of James, and Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7. So these steps have been around forever. Helping other people, praying to God, you know, sacrificing your entire life for him, turning your will and your life over to him. Everything we do in this, the way we live, the way we analyze ourselves, have been around forever. They're all in the Bible. And the people have been cured and relieved and have changed their lives and been reborn to be different people, different creatures, forever. That's why they even say it in the big book. They even use the same language. It didn't start in 1939 when they published the big book. It's been going on for a long time. Bill looked across at my wife and said to her, "Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people." I think I have the answer. Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing, and he had given God the credit for having done it. And he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, "The Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep telling other people about it," has been a sort of golden text for the AA program and for me. What's he trying to say? Bill Wilson had a relationship with God. He was grateful to God, and he just wanted to tell other people about it. And that was the key, the golden arch for the new happiness. Well, you know that? Well, of course, that's just one guy. Then you go back to, he sold himself short. Another one of those founders, those guys. "This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in a daily living. Courage to face each day as we place the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are as we place the old impatient chopping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I've made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods is not great. I don't have a lot of stuff. But I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, this guy's about to have the epiphany. He's about to talk about what Bill Dodson was talking about. Above all, because he got it, he figured it out, he knew what the one thing was. Above all, you got thousands and thousands of people in the world, they don't have a clue what the one thing is. They're living lives of quiet desperation. Don't get ahead of me now. Quiet desperation. You got thousands of people in Alcoholics Anonymous, they don't have a clue what this thing is all about. They're running around like chickens with their heads chopped off. They don't have a clue. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing according... And you know what's the crazy thing? It's all over the big book. It's all over the walls. It's being shouted out all over here. So the problem is not that it's not being publicized. The problem is that it's not that that's not known. The problem is that people don't want to see it. They don't want it because they're filled with old ideas and they want to hang on. They want to hang on to their crappy minds and their crappy old ideas because they're defiant and they're alcoholic and they don't want the real happiness and the new freedom. That's the problem. And that's the problem. The problem is not the disease. The problem is us.
Yeah.
Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God. I'm seeing a pattern here. Who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. Okay, that's two. Two. Okay, let's go. Let's go through this real quickly. Through the entire book in like 5 minutes, okay? The entire book. We'll start from first to last, okay? Let's see if we can see a pattern. Whether, you know, maybe this was just a coincidence. Right? Well, we already know they talk about the great fact is this and nothing less. We know what the great fact is. That's early on they talk about the great fact. What do they say the great fact is? Let me see if I can find that. My great fact. It's somewhere. Where is that in? Right here. It's somewhere around here. Oh, here it is. We have found much of heaven. We have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less. It's just this and nothing less. It's nothing less than this. That we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator, has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. Creator with a capital C. They're talking about God. He has commenced to accomplish for those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. What are they talking about again? They're talking about a relationship with God. He's doing for us what we can't do for ourselves, which, by the way, is the exact last sentence they say at the end of the promises. We realize that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. So he must be talking about the same guy. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will happen for you and countless others. They're talking about the same guy Bill Wilson was talking about. Must be that same guy, right? I don't know. You know, I mean, you guys are smart. How about this? It says, so our troubles, we think, are basically our own making. They arise out of ourselves. The alcoholic is an extreme example. Self will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we must get rid of selfishness. We must, or it kills us. Kills us. God makes that, there he is again. God makes that possible. Apparently, you know, there he is again. And there often seems no way of getting rid of him without his aid. We had to have God's help. This is the how and why of it. First, we had to quit playing God. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, being all powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. We were reborn. Oh. So what does that have to do with step 9? Well, we're getting to that, but I mean, I'm seeing a pattern here. You see, like, there's no daylight between any of these guys. How about chapter 6? Because what are all these steps about? These steps are tools. They're exercises to get you to the point where you can what? Improve, link up to that, to the Lord, to God, to everyone you want to call him, link up to that power, you know, and grab that power and have that power working in your life and remove all the obstructions to that power so that you can get to step 11, having finally manifested that power in yourself, and then get more of that power so that it changes you into a different human being so you can feel and be different. So by the time you get to step 12, over the years, having surmounted all these difficulties, you are experiencing the joy of living. I'm sorry, Mr. Spatz, you have cancer. It's okay, Joe. It's okay, Doc. It's going to be okay. Cancer can't kill you. It can't kill your spirit. I've seen it in AA. All sorts of things can manifest itself and happen in your life. It doesn't have to kill you. It doesn't have to make you feel sorry for yourself. Not if he's in your life. Not if you're grateful to him. Not if you've been cured of an incredible disease. Not if you realize that no matter what's happening to you, it's happening for your good, ultimately for your good, if that's your attitude. Having made a personal inventory, what shall we do about it? Here it is, step five. Right before step 5, it says, having made our personal inventory, step 4, what shall we do about it? The 8th step and the 9th step comes out of step 4 and 5. People we've hurt, people we've harmed, what we do, it says, what shall we do about it? This is what it says we've been trying to do. We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator. That's what it says. Our Creator. And discover the obstacles in our path. That's what we're trying to do. What did you think you were trying to do in here? That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to get you to get rid of the obstacles that are keeping you from having a relationship with him, the same relationship Bill Wilson had with him or Dr. Bob had with him that allowed them to experience much of heaven. So let's keep on going. I mean, this is just walking through the book. We're just doing a little review of what we've been through so far. Let no alcoholic say, now we're on working with others. Where I'm working with new people. You know the part where they say burn the idea into the person's mind that he can get well regardless of anything as long as he has a relationship with God? This is working with new people. You ever have people say, well, don't talk about God to new people, it'll scare them away? Well, that's not what they say in here. You know what that is? That's the wisdom of the rooms. That's the wisdom of the rooms. That's the wisdom of a group of drunks that get together that say, don't tell anybody the truth because it'll scare them away because it scares the shit out of them. Yeah. Because if they talk about it, then they may have to do it. So let's sort of water it down so we don't have to do it. You know, we'll just feed you. There's really three types of AA. You know, there's the strong AA, there's the mild AA, and then there's the weak AA. And all of them have certain type of benefits. And as soon as you figure out you can stay sober using the weak AA for a while or the medium AA for a while, You'll take that and you'll throw away the strong AA, but you won't get the benefits that these guys got because they were doing the strong stuff. They were drinking the strong coffee. It says right here, let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. But this could be anything. Family back, car back, job back. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. Hey, wow. What does it say in the last part? It says our book is meant to be suggestive only. The book won't even keep you sober. It says we know but a little. We don't even know much. So your real reliance has to be on him. Who could they be talking about? Right. Very good. It says, he will show you how to create the fellowship you create. He's going to even show you how to create fellowship. Did you know God will show you how to create? I promise you, if you seek him out, you will know exactly who to fellowship with, and you will know exactly, you will be convinced. You will have unbelievable spiritual discernment as to who the hell to stay away from. And if you're an alcoholic and you don't have God in your life, I promise you, you will hang out with people that ultimately make you feel crappy and you'll think they're your best friends. Because if you're an alcoholic, you don't even, because you suffer from unhealthy dependencies, which means you end up dependent upon unhealthy things. It's not only alcohol, it's that unhealthy woman, it's that unhealthy man, it's that unhealthy relationship. It's all those people that are telling you, you won't believe what so-and-so said about you. And you think that's your best friend as you walk away with your heart ripped out because this guy told you something that you can't do anything about. And you'll say, you know what my friend told me? And that person is Satan, he's the worst enemy in your life. And you won't even know that. Because a real friend, if they hear somebody talking about you behind your back, they stand up for you. They say, don't talk about that guy behind your back, okay? Because you want to know something? There's something wrong with you if you have to talk about people behind their back. If you have something bad to say about Susie, you talk to her face because she's a friend of mine. She's a good person, and I don't appreciate it. And then Susie doesn't even mention a word to you because she knows it'll just tear you apart and there's nothing you do about it. An enemy can't wait to go back up to you to lord over you and have power over you and say, you wouldn't believe what so-and-so said about you, so they can rip your heart out and somehow make believe they're your friends. But we don't know that. Those are the kind of friends we make. Those are the kind of friends we make. And that's alcoholism, and that's why you feel so crappy about yourself all the time. Because the people who are trying to save your ass by telling you tough stuff that you don't want to hear, but is the truth, you run away from them, and you talk badly about them, and the jokers that are trying to kill you, you suck up to them, you marry them, you go out to them, and that's why you're suffering the way you do.
Wow.
Because you're like two-year-old children. And that's the way it is.
Wow.
So I'm glad I got that off my chest. I feel a lot better now. Oh, well.
You get over it.
Abandon yourself to God. That's what it says. So then you're going to do this stuff. You're going to do this stuff. You know, this stuff is so scary. It's so scary. It really is scary. You really have to have, I'll tell you from where I come from. You better believe in God in order to do this stuff. I mean, to walk up to your ex-wife, your former wife, and say, you know, let me tell you something. I was wrong. To go up to some of these people that you used to hate, that you screwed up with, that you could go to sleep at night because at 3 o'clock in the morning they're going through your brain. Why did I say this? Why didn't I go that? To go up to them a year later or 6 months later and say, you know what, that thing, when I did that thing, I was wrong. I mean, I'm sorry is easy for me. I'm an alcoholic. Man, I'm an excuse-aholic. I'm a sorry-aholic. I'm sorry is easy. Listen, I lived a whole life for 31 years. All I said was, I'm sorry. I mean, I'm sorry. But I was never sorry. I was never wrong. I was never really sorry. You know, I mean, the way I'm sorry, this is how it works. Because I'm, I love. I'm not an NA. I mean, I could be an NA. I mean, I'm an addict too. But I mean, you know, I love the thing in NA. I know some of you guys are NA, where they talk about dope fiending. I'm not even sure we have a comparable word in NA in AA for that, dope fiending. You know, when you're dope fiending somebody. What do they say? An alcoholic will steal your wallet. A dope fiend will steal your wallet and then help you look for it. You know what I mean? I'd go up to somebody and say, I'm sorry, but what I really meant was, you know, stop making me feel bad. Because I'd say, I'd rip your heart out, rape your wife, kill your dog, whatever it is. And I'd say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You know, I was drunk. I'm sorry. And then you wouldn't immediately say, oh, that's okay. See, this is the way it's supposed to work. I say, I'm sorry. And you say, that's okay. And then I don't have to feel bad. You know what I mean? Because I'm selfish and self-centered. And I don't give a crap about you or anything that happened about you. I care about me. So I say, I'm sorry. And then you say, forget about it. That's the way it works. Because if you don't play the game, if you don't run the script, then I say, I'm sorry. And you say, and you don't say, that's okay. And I say, hey, I said I was sorry. I said I was sorry I raped your dog. What's the big deal, you know? Whereas if you do anything to me, that's good for 300 meetings and me hating you for the rest of your life, okay? But you're not allowed to feel bad for my thing because when you feel bad, you make me feel guilty. So the bottom line, how do you get rid of that deal? How do you get out of that sort of mindset? Now, you think that, you know why we left with that mindset? Because it's so true and it's so crazy. And that's part of alcoholism. Why should you expect to feel good and be free when you're messing up like that and you have that sort of attitude? And you know, that part of alcoholism, the thing I just described, is the way we think and the way we act without the booze. That has nothing to do with booze. That has to do with our alcoholism, which centers in the mind, not the body, and goes deeper than that. It has to do with every thought and every sinew in our body, and it comes natural to us. It's not even that we sit around and plan this stuff. That's the way we actually feel. Our alcoholic life is the only normal one. We really do feel, no matter what we do to somebody, if we say we're sorry, it should go away, and that should be it. You know? I mean, I'm watching this girl. Anybody watching this girl who stabbed her boyfriend 16 times and slit his throat and shot him? She's sorry. I made a mistake, you know. I mean, he made me a slut. I'm sorry. She's sorry. She said, "What's the? I don't even understand why this is happening to me." She's sorry, you know. But, you know, she'll find a good 12-step program somewhere. I know some of you guys are attracted to you, want to marry her. I get it. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. Can't wait for her to be free so you can propose. And that's what this thing, you got to do this. So I do this 9-step. And one other benefit of the 9-step, I just want to say, and then we'll close up, that I'll talk about, is that it is difficult to do the 9-step. It is difficult to make amends. It is, you know, because you're scared. And you worry about what people are going to say and all that sort of stuff. And you do this thing, one step at a time, one day at a time. And one of the benefits of actually getting up the courage and getting up the faith and going forward. You know, really, it takes a lot of faith to do this stuff because you almost have to say, I have no idea what the outcome is going to be. And it really doesn't matter what the outcome is going to be. You know, you just got to do it. But you go ahead and do it. It builds your relationship with God. Many times the outcome is so unbelievably better than we ever... You know, I'm going to tell you something. I can't live a life where I worry, when the phone rings, I worry about who's on the other end of the phone. Where I check caller ID all the time. I can't live a life when mail comes from somebody, I rip it up and throw it away without even looking at it. I can't live a life anymore where I'm walking down the street and I'm worrying about who I'm going to run into. I can't live a life anymore where somebody invites me to a party, somebody invites me somewhere, and I have to say who's going to be there. Because I have to, and if somebody, a certain person's there, I say, I can't go. I can't live a life hiding out from people anymore. I can't live a life where I see somebody in a store or in a restaurant. I say, oh man, I hope he doesn't see me. I hope she doesn't see me. And then I turn around and walk away and feel like I've escaped. When I haven't escaped anything, because you want to say, I haven't escaped from me and my fear, because that fear follows me. And it tells me I'm a piece of crap. And I'm in the car, it says, you're an idiot, you're a jerk, you're stupid. And it tells me all those guilt things, and it accuses me, and it makes me feel restless, irritable, discontented, and maybe I'll run to a meeting and I won't drink that night, but I'm still as alcoholic, and I'm suffering from this disease as if I had been drinking. I can't live my life like that, because that's not the new freedom, and that's not the new happiness. And what happens is when you actually do these things and force yourself to do it, you know what happens? You get sick and tired, and this is actually 10-step stuff, of making amends. You get sick and tired of making amends. You know what happens when you get sick and tired of making amends? You say, I don't like making these amends. I mean, I like the outcome and I'll do it, but I don't like making the amends. So you know what happens? What happens is you figure out how to live your life by not opening your mouth, by not sending the email, by not saying what you think you ought to say, because you decide, you say, I'm going to stop doing this stuff because I'm sick and tired of making the amends after I do it. And all of a sudden, you know what happens? You start restraining your tongue. You start restraining the pen. You start acting differently. You know, I sat in my... I'll share something personal that happened to me because I think God gives you these stories in this life for a reason. I have a daughter and a son-in-law who I love dearly, and two little grandchildren that I love dearly. And I have a wife who's in Al-Anon, Our Ladies of Perpetual Revenge, who knows how to take an Al-Anon 10-step. You know, when I'm wrong, she probably admits it. And listen, I'm not perfect. You know, I mean, I'm certainly not perfect. So I take them out to dinner last night, the whole crew. I got a bunch of kids and grandkids, but I just took, you know, these two kids, the grandkids and my wife out. And we're sitting at dinner, and it's late, and I just spent the whole day working on a big case and stuff like that, and I was tired. And the topic immediately turned to me and what they thought about me and how I'm working my program. And there's nothing like better than paying for dinner for people who are telling me how they think I ought to work my program. Because my wife's in Al-Anon, and she pretty much understands what I need to do to change and, you know, how I can be better. And my daughter, you know, she's a spiritual person. She pretty much understands. And my son-in-law, he's got like 10 years, so he pretty much understands, although he was kind of embarrassed by the whole thing. But his wife kept on saying, "No, tell him, you know what I mean?" So for a half an hour, I listened to how I need to shape up. I mean, I'm going to tell you something. This is the truth. I listen to it because you never know. They may have a point. They probably have a point there. After about a half an hour of it, because you know we're alcoholics. You know how alcoholics are? You know, if something's worth saying, it's worth saying 50 times, you know? I held up my hand. I said, "Hey, you know, I've had a long day." I said, I appreciate everything you've had to say. Can we have a different topic, you know, for the rest of the meal?" And they were nice. We had a different topic. But, you know, I think about, and I love them, and it's fine. And you know what it's actually good for is a great AA meeting. It's good for using it at this meeting as an illustration. But one of the things I thought about is the ability to take criticism, whether it's good criticism or bad criticism or wherever criticism or how it comes from. The amazing thing that this program does for you, I mean, this is like for somebody like me, an alcoholic, you know, take criticism from other people and listen to it and just sit there and be able to listen to it and say, "Well, I appreciate you," and really not have a resentment and not feel, you know. And at the end, they said, "Somebody said, well, you understand what we're saying?" I said, "Yes, I absolutely understand why it bothers you." I understand. I absolutely understand why all these things bother you about me. I understand that. I understand that deal, you know. There are things that bother me too, you know, sometimes about people. But I try to look into that so I won't be botherable. And I'll get that new freedom and that new happiness. You know, that say, well, you know, how far down the road we'll go, you know, we'll experience. You know what that say? It says, what does it say? We'll lose fear of people and of economic insecurity. That means fear of people's judgments. Fear of what people think about you. Man, that would be great. Wouldn't that be great if you could do that deal? God bless you. Thank you very much.